Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 86 of the Mini PC Show, Big Talk Small Computers. And this episode is brought to you by my friend, John Hollinger, who I was actually speaking with today. Thank you to all of our patrons for making it possible. Dor, how the heck are you?
Hey, Rich. I'm going to say normal crazy. I will say it seems like with this show in particular, it really does like ebb and flow, where we have a week where we have to like scrape and dig for news type content. And then the very next week, we're literally overwhelmed and there's no possible way we could cover all the links we have in the notes. So I'll say I've had an eventful week in using my Git Pocket to speak to me web pages, and so I've been like doing that a lot.
Okay, yeah, I've been wanting to set that up. Actually, you hit me with an interesting link while I was on a two-hour drive, and I was like, hey, if I could have the web page read to me, that would be great. But it's just tough to set up while you're driving.
Yeah, and I did have a service where I could basically share a link out in Android, and then it would be turned into a spoken word the entire page, but that service wanted money. I'm not paying money for that service because I would be broke. Because here's the example, Rich. Today is the 13th? 12th? 13th?
13th. I have trisdegaphobia.
Okay, it's February 13th, and in the month of February, going by my podcast addict, it says I've listened to, in February, 13 days and 18 hours worth of podcast. So if I got to pay for stuff I'm listening to, I'd be broke.
Yeah, so before we get into the links, I just want to talk about personal adventures in mini PCing. One of the things, I have two Nooks. One is a Celeron Nook and one is an i5. The i5 is a Gen 6, which means it has 32 gigs of RAM maximum. And I use them as my VMware home lab. And I powered it on, it's going to be a couple of weeks ago. It wouldn't even post, which is the, what does post stand for? It's like something, startup test, something like that. Power on startup test, thank you. So that's where you would go into the BIOS and change BIOS settings. So nothing. And no arrangement of the RAM chips or the CMOS battery, nothing would make it work. Had a little bit of a either language barrier or bad phone connection issue with Intel, but they sent me a brand new machine probably within hours of getting my old one sent back to them. And when I say brand new, retail packaging, not OEM white box type stuff. So super happy with Intel. Thank you for doing the right thing. Also, in case you thought you were dead out of luck on a warranty, they have a 3-year warranty on the Nooks. And I was like 2.5 years in. So super happy about that.
Yeah, as much as I dig on Intel, I partially do it because they're the leader and I always want to root for the underdog. With all that said, few companies in my experience really try to do customer service, and everybody I know who's had to call up Intel for anything has gotten nothing but top-notch customer support. So they got that going for them.
Yeah, I was actually, so what had happened, because I'm on a schedule, I'm either in Orlando 3 days a week or 5 days a week, and then things will happen that I travel on a weekend so I get nothing done, that kind of thing. So it was a couple of weeks before I got the RMA set up with them, and I shipped it out. And funny enough, the day I dropped it off at the post office, they sent me an email. It's like, hey, are you actually going to ship this to us? You know, very nicely worded, of course, not sarcastic like the way I say it. And I'm like, yeah, hey, here's the tracking number. They wrote me back, you know, a person wrote me back. Thank you, blah, blah, blah. You know, we'll be looking for it. Thanks for the update. And, you know, so I did it USPS and whatever. It's always the priority mail is the cheapest. So they got it, I think it was Georgia. So they got it in 2 or 3 days or less. And same day they got it, they sent me another one back out. So I super impressed. I got it actually overnight from them. I don't think they intentionally shipped it overnight. They may have. But, you know, I guess it moves that fast when they're that close by.
Well, it's that, and I'm sure it's because it's Intel. Like, it's like steak with, you know, cows. The good restaurants get the priority service, even though They don't pay for it because they're the better restaurants. When Intel ships something out, little doubt in my mind, the guy picking it up goes directly back to the main hub to get it out as quick as possible.
Oh yeah. It's funny, when you're new in the business and don't know something, like I was doing photography on Long Island, and I was dealing with somebody that dealt with my father in the past for I forgot what it was, but it was something, you know, with the final product. You know, whether it was like folders or mats or something. And I'm like, oh, okay, can you know, a priority ship it below? They're like, no, UPS will get it there tomorrow. They're like, just do UPS ground. I'm like, okay. And sure enough, they're right. The other thing is, I'm kind of in a nuke and pave feeling. And so I had a whole bunch of stray VMs on my home lab, my Nook home lab, and that's NUC. I just, you know what? I haven't played with them in 6 months. They're gone. Didn't even think twice about it. Likewise, I think I'm going to do the same thing with my Mac, my 2012 MacBook Pro, and you know, any stray SD cards, they have a number on their head and they're getting nuked.
Gotcha. Well, I enjoy wiping the slate clean. There's only I'm the guy who used to copy over my entire home folder or my entire directory over before anything. Now I don't really do that anymore. There are sometimes key folders I will copy over. Like I do most of the time copy over like my main browser folder. So on this computer that I'm using to like talk to you, that would be Google Chrome. But on the
Oh,
com but on the
no,
computer I'm streaming, it would be Firefox. So
I'm a data hoarder. I not only did I do a time capsule backup, I'll do a carbon copy cloner backup. I create a VM with my current operating system. I clone that VM and then I do the operating system upgrade on the clone to verify that it works properly. So I only have 4 or 5 backups.
gotcha. Well, I gotta ask you, isn't it kind of annoying how sometimes those copying of folders and files seems like really, really slow? Because, you know, it turns out you're copying over gigs and gigs and gigs.
For those of you who aren't watching the video, I'm holding up an 8 terabyte external USB drive. Costco regularly has these things on like bargain. So you track the price right now, they're like $119 at Costco. They're usually that when they came out, they're like 169. Right now they're 119.
Gotcha. Well, I don't know about you, but I honestly almost can't stand how basically copying over backing up data is, for the most part, slow. And it's not
Oh, yeah.
slow, it's sometimes really, really slow. Well, if you take a look at line 840 in the notes, Rich, this is basically the answer to your problems. It is basically a NVMe thumb drive.
No.
NVMe is silly, insane, lightning fast. It makes USB 3 look like USB 1. That's how fast NVMe can be. And what this is, it's a little enclosure like you used to buy for your hard drives. You would open it up, slap in the hard drive, and then you know, you would have your drive. Well, this is an NVMe case. So you basically pop it open, slap in your NVMe drive. And then you have USB-C speeds up to
Okay,
10 gigs a second
all right,
kind of
I'm
speed.
twitching right now.
Oh, I know. Trust me, when I saw this, I got a little giddy. It's $50 for the enclosure. This is not the drive, but this is the kind of thing where you could literally pop it open and keep switching what drive is in it. You're just using this for convenience. And it's right now $50, which tells me that
It's going
in
down.
it's going to, you know, in like 2 months, it's going to be $30. And then in 2 more months, it's going to be $15 kind of thing.
So, Ari, a USB 3 drive, the USB 3 port, I'm sorry, the blue one, how fast is that?
Well, it's a question. Is it USB 3? Is it USB 3.1? Or is it USB 3.2?
Right.
The normal USB 3, I want to say, is 2 gigs a second. 3.1, I believe, is still technically 2 gigs a second, but has some extra functionality. And then USB 3.2 is the super speed. That's the one that I believe
Is
can
that
go
the
up to
yellow
six
one?
gigs. Yes.
Okay, because my Nooks have the yellow ones on them. Per Nook, there's one yellow USB 3.
Gotcha. Now, I believe they go up to 6 gigs a second. Now, this USB-C can go up to 10 gigs a second from this device. That is, oh my. Can you imagine backing up a hard drive in literally 30 seconds?
So that's serious data center speed. Like typical data centers, fiber connects between machines will be 10 gig. You know, 10 gig, you know, they'll, I don't want to say Ethernet, but, you know, fiber will typically be 10 gig inside a data center.
Gotcha. Now, this is not a perfect piece of hardware. What I'm going to say is this does support M.2 NVMe SSDs. Link will be in the notes. But this does not support M.2 SATA SSDs, M.2 Wi-Fi Bluetooth, M.2 PCIe SSD, M.2 capture card, M.2 TV cards, or mSATA SSDs. It just supports M.2 NVMe SSD drives, which, you know, it isn't every kind of drive, but it at least supports that. And I honestly cannot wait for the price of this to go down. I already went to Camel, and I made myself a little bookmark thing that said, when this price gets down to $28, send me an email.
Cool beans. And you know what? I'm going to drop this in the cart and then click save for later so I see.
Yeah, that was the kind of thing I put in the notes. I put in the spreadsheet that we all access. And I was honestly hoping you wouldn't see it until the show.
I did.
Well, because who has time to just browse a spreadsheet? I mean, come on.
Well, if I was properly doing show prep, I would. So, can we talk about line 838?
Yeah, but you got to give me a second because for some reason my view keeps resetting and I got to put it up to 150% because I'm old and blind. You said 830.
838. So this is Windows 10, full-blown OS with a GUI on Raspberry Pi 3.
Such mixed feelings, Rich. Such mixed feelings.
Good way to put it. I don't know if I'm just a heretic about it. Most of my career, or IT-ish, whatever you want to call it, hackery, with Linux has been headless. And for the most part, I do stink almost everything personally with my Pi infrastructure or Pi device infrastructure headless. So I can't imagine, you know, nobody has a video running this, do they? They don't have a video showing.
Not that I've seen. And the reason for it is you probably get like 2 frames a second. There is no way under any type of reality anyone is living in that this can be at all a good experience. What, even if you're literally just using it as a terminal to open up text files and edit, you know, 10K text files, there's no way this is a good, enjoyable experience is my logic.
And as much as I'm about to trash Raspberry Pi, I do have like 7 Pi Zero Ws within inches of me and 4 or 5 Pi Threes within inches of me right now. They're a super great device for so many things. Like it's like training wheels on a bicycle. But if they did this for an Odroid XU4 or they did this for a ROC 64 Pro, now we're talking about something. You know, we're talking about a machine that could have up to 4 gigs of RAM, a really good processor, gigabit Ethernet. That would be something I would be much more interested in trying. And I may just do this so I can report back next week how bad it was. I mean, how my experience was.
Oh, I encourage any and everybody to do this because I will not. I will. There is no way under any circumstance I will ever put myself through this kind of torment. I have no problem saying that out loud. And honestly, Rich, I have one instance of Windows left in my entire ecosystem. And it's because it's a dual boot tablet that I can't get rid of Windows on it. I, as a podcast guy, used to need Windows to load iTunes to add new shows to iTunes. Well, that day hasn't been around for now like 2 or 3 years. You don't need Windows to load up iTunes to, you know, add a new podcast. So I haven't needed it for that. So it's literally been sitting there doing nothing in Windows for the longest time. And I'm pretty sure if I were to boot it up, it would be 12 hours plus of updates just catching up.
Okay. And again, I keep I don't want to sound like the Raspberry Pi basher. I think I kind of self-inoculated by telling you I got like 11 plus Raspberry Pis within arm's reach of myself right now. With the big Raspberry Pi announcement, drum roll, please.
Yeah.
What's the big Raspberry Pi announcement for 2019?
They've
They're going to have a store.
turned bougie. That's what's happened. That's it.
Is
And
it bougie? Is it going to be like the Apple Store in New York City?
well, people are already saying it looks better. It looks like somebody took an Apple Store and they like put a maker space in front of it. I'll just say this. This to me is now the official beginning of the end. I said
Yeah.
in like two episodes ago how, it doesn't matter what anybody does. Nobody's going to be able to compete with Raspberry Pi, blah, 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 blah. They're here for a third world company. They're here for education. They're
Right,
here
yeah.
for, no, they're not. And basically Eblen, whatever his name is, admitted the reason that they're doing a Raspberry Pi store is for profit. It's not to better the world.
How are
It's
they going to
for profit.
profit?
I, because they're going to try to sell people entire kits. Special, one of a kind, you can't get anywhere else, USB hubs. Special, one of a kind mice you can't get anywhere else. Special mugs you can't get anywhere else. And if you take a look at the picture, the best link for this, to be honest, is the raspberrypi.org, just because the other sites are inundated with ads like ridiculously. And if you go to now I put it up to like link 819 the notes. You look at that and that looks like an Apple store, okay? This is nothing more than a profit motive. There's no way this was cheap. I mean, yes, retail's dying, so the space they saved money on, blah, 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 blah. But there's no way anything about this was cheap. This was incredibly expensive. And if you read the articles, he will say, yes, it's to learn. People can play with Scratch, show people the kind of possibilities we can do. But they didn't do it for years, even though the inner team has been asking for this for, he said, at least 3 years. He said, now we can do it because now we think we can make a profit. Bang, bang. That is literally Dracula sucking down cloves of garlic. That is like suicide, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. So there's definite, and I hate doing this. As much as I really have mad respect for Raspberry Pi and what they've done, because they've really made things so much better and easier for all of us that are interested in single board computing. They're never going to make any money selling a Raspberry Pi at a store. That's not the case because there is so much overhead.
I know, but Rich, they're not going to do it. Okay, if you go into a Home Depot or Lowe's or a hardware store and you buy a grill, they don't make money off the grill. They make money off the grill cover, the grill accessories, and all the other stuff. It's the same thing here. They're going to make money off of everything else.
It's like when you buy a car at a dealer, the dealer typically doesn't make money on the car. There's probably some back-end stuff going on, but they'll make money on the warranty that they sell you and other things.
Yeah, and I'll say this, because I listen to so much podcasting, what I'll say is if you listen to somebody who truly loves something, okay, for instance, if you listen to a Star Wars podcast, nobody will complain more about Star Wars stuff than the diehard fans. If you listen to a Walt Disney World podcast, nobody will complain more about changes inside of Walt Disney World more than Walt Disney World fans. If you listen to political podcasts, they don't complain about anything on their side. They just complain about the other side because they're not, don't really care about it. They're just there for money. But if you look at this, the reason we're complaining about this is because we feel so passionately about what they stood for, where they came from, and what potential they had to actually change the world. And they've willingly given it all up. I honestly think, personally, they saw this was the beginning of the end. You have Odroid making incredible strides compared to them. You have Pine people making leaps and bounds of changes compared to what they were doing was nothing. And I think they saw the writing on the wall and said, if we don't cash out now, we will never be able to cash out again. And that's the honest truth as I see it. It doesn't mean it's the truth. It's just what I think I see.
You said Odroid, and I saw a link in the notes, and I kind of got chills after I clicked
Well,
on
I know, but hold, slow down, Roy Rogers.
it.
We're gonna first go to link. Now this is link 820 in the notes. Okay, and I wanted to bring this up because this is Raspberry Pi related, and there's more than a couple people out there who have complained to me, explaining to me like I'm a little baby, that I don't understand what I'm talking about. I'm an idiot. I'm a stupid. I don't know what I'm talking about. Why don't you learn something? Blah, 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 blah. You say you're for open source. You say you're for freedom. How dare you? How dare you talk bad about the Raspberry Pi? They're completely open. And then I try to
Oof.
explain to the people they're not open.
I guess people are smart enough not to send that mail my way.
Well, I'll just say this. I understand why they thought that, because that's what the media tells them. Number one rule in life, everybody is lying to you. Everybody has a motive for you to believe what they're believing. I try to insist to people, go read other people. Don't listen to what I'm saying. Don't ever listen to what I'm saying. I'm an idiot, okay? But go to this link on Own Your Bits, and I will say I've been to Own Your Bits website off and on for at least, I think, 2 or 3 years. Right now, they are the manufacturers of the Nextcloud instance that I'm running on my Rock 64, and it's butter. Runs fantastic, by the way. I need to do an update. I keep forgetting. But they have this link, and they have this article called What's Wrong with the Raspberry Pi? And if you didn't listen
Good
to this
article.
on Gitpocket, Rich, I definitely encourage you listen to it. This is a longer article, okay? This is a lot of words. Whole hell of a lot of words. This is the kind of amount of words that causes me to have like conniption fits to where I literally have to drink in order to read it. It's too many words.
Yeah, this is well written, good article, and I'd recommend our readers to give it a good read. Because I think it does explain the whole Pi, Raspberry Pi conundrum that's going on. And yeah, it is a love-hate relationship. There's definite things I want, there's definite issues with the board, and it's definitely, done a lot of great things for us.
Yeah, and like they do start out being very complimentary because they should, like you said, Rich. Many PCs would not exist in the way they exist today if it wasn't for the blood, sweat, and tears, if it wasn't for the effort, if it wasn't for the community, if it wasn't for everything that the Raspberry Pi Foundation and all the community did. With that said, that doesn't mean we can't criticize it, okay?
All right, I got a trivia question for you. Do you know what kind of engine that is, on where it says performance?
Yeah, of course I do. It's a gas engine. I don't
It's
know, man.
funny, I could tell from the thumbnail I knew what it was. It's a turbocharged Volkswagen, and I didn't realize
Oh,
it
it's a
had a variable
Nazi engine.
Venturi fuel injection. And it looks like it's actually an aero conversion because that looks like it's a dynafocal mount to fit on an airframe of an airplane.
Ah, gotcha. Well, I mean, I say Nazi stuff, and I'm kidding, not really. But they really do make good engine.
It was the people's car.
exactly. But
And
okay,
actually, there's good YouTube videos on that.
I agree. So they do start out with saying what is so good about the Raspberry Pi, because there's immense amounts of things you can literally flaunt about how great the Pi has been and is to this day. And honestly, they still have a tremendous opportunity. All they got to do is put out a board with one thing on it, either a gig NIC or 4 gigs of RAM or a couple USB 3 ports or something like that. That's all they got to do is just do something. But then they go on, and one of the things that they go through in incredible detail, in the best detail I've seen in the written world, and they go through how the Raspberry Pi is not open source. And it isn't that it isn't just open source, it's that the GPU is actually running the entire operating system, and that is all enclosed in a binary blob that nobody has any access to. It is a very crooked, disgusting propaganda. I mean, if you want to learn about propaganda, sure, go read about World War II. Sure, go read about South Africa, some of the stuff they did. Sure, go read about China. But if you want to know how to do propaganda unbelievably efficiently with nobody suspecting a thing, you look at how the Raspberry Pi Foundation pitched their hardware to the community and how the community blindly, without question, just saluted and did everything that they said and insisted that the Raspberry Pi was open source when nothing in the boot process or the GPU is in fact open source. So the only way I am going to support the Raspberry Pi to a large degree is if this is the year where they actually open source the entire stack or change the entire chipset around to where I can support it.
And, you know, they have a good point here. The next point after that is power. And realistically, to power a Raspberry Pi, it's a real pain in the butt, especially if you have a bunch of them, because they really do want 2.5 amps. And if they don't get it, they'll complain.
Well, and see, what they did was they went with what was considered a ubiquitous available power supply that people already had. And it was a really good choice to do that. But then they kept slowly throttling up how much power they needed through the different versions. So now with this latest version, unless you have a really good wall wart and a really good cable, you're going to have power issues on your Pi. That's just the way it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thanks for mentioning that, because it's the two together. It's a good wall wart and a cable that's capable of delivering 2.5 amps.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, if we didn't like the Raspberry Pi, we wouldn't even have brought this linked up. If we didn't like the Raspberry Pi, we wouldn't have talked about the store in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is one of the technical areas of the world where people are learning things. We care about it so much. We want it to succeed. You know what I mean? It's like being the fan of that football team, like, you know, the Detroit Lions that just can't even get to the Super Bowl, but you have faith that they're going to, this is their year. This is their year. I keep saying to myself, this is when the Raspberry Pi Foundation is going to make the right decisions and do the right thing for the greater good of the entire world, and not just for the greater good of Broadcom, a multi-billion-dollar company.
Because it's funny, just today I'm running a Raspberry Pi 3 and I'm actually running it off one of the ports on my Nook, and it just continuously reported, you know, under voltage.
Yeah, I mean, and I've rarely vented about how much I don't like barrel connectors, but here's the gimmick. You don't have that problem with barrel connectors.
Right. And so people might not think about this too much, but not only is the connector designed to fit a plug, but it's also designed for a purpose. What's going to be happening on that connector? Does it need to be shielded? Is it RF? Is it, you know, high frequency stuff? Is it power? How much power can we push through that before we start melting and frying stuff? So those are all considerations. And I never thought much of a barrel connector. I always thought they were kind of stupid. But the barrel connector provides a lot of surface area for the current to flow on. And that's why a lot of laptops have barrel connectors.
Yeah, I mean, I just wish there was more of a... I wish the standard said with the barrel connectors, there was a smaller number of diameters and a smaller number of possibilities, just to make things easier for someone stupid like me to go buy a new barrel connector. But right. But there isn't. There's literally, I think, over 85 different combinations of barrel size and power out.
Also, the external and internal diameter of the barrel have to be known. You can't just go by the external. Ask me how I know.
Oh, because you got burnt.
Now, the cool thing about it is I have an HP EliteBook for work, and I bought another power supply for it. It's a barrel connector. Guess how much that power supply cost Amazon?
Hopefully less than 20.
10. If I bought the official Apple power supply for my MacBook Pro, do you know how much it costs?
Knowing Apple, 160.
Wow, you'd like double, $85.
Oh, wow.
But I can get a knockoff MagSafe power supply. You know, it's an 85 watt power supply for like 20 or 30 bucks. And I got a number of them. So if one breaks, realistically, if you're traveling around with your computer, your laptop, and you're a consultant, and your power supply goes, you have a limited number of hours before you're dead. Now, there may be Macs stored nearby, or there may not be. And you may have to pay 85 bucks. So my plan when I was consulting with the Mac is I would bring the official Mac power supply to the client because it looks good. And I would have in my backpack or in the hotel the knockoff power supply in case that wire finally went bad. And it will.
Gotcha, gotcha. Here's another like truth that as far as I see it, Rich. In this last week, we saw an unbelievable number of articles saying, here are 10 things that we know about the Raspberry, about the next Raspberry Pi, which turned out to be nothing. If you actually read the article instead of just shared the frigging link, like all the mental invalids on social media, if you actually read the article, you would see nothing. What we know about the next one is it's going to be better. And it's going to be announced this year. And that's it. There was not 10 things. Okay. Number one. Number two, they launched this store. Shooting unbelievably straight with you, Rich. I know what it means to be desperate. I was in the realm of virginity for a long time. So I can recognize when something's desperate. And this is unbelievably, sickeningly low-class, desperate from the Raspberry Pi Foundation to grab headlines, to grab articles, to grab clicks. Because, in my honest opinion, they are terrified of the Pine Tab. They are terrified of the Rock 64. They are terrified of all these announcements coming out, making them look pathetically small, is what I'm going to say. And to be very honest, pathetically small. And the Rock 64 and the Pinebook Pro. And then you said in the notes, we had another link, and that was to a Odroid. I want to say it's a N2. And the N1 was canceled about a year ago. That was supposed to use an RK3399 chipset, and that one was canceled. So now they're doing this N2, and this one is supposed to be even better. And Rich, there's no way I can say this clearer. Okay, there's no way I can say this with more honesty and more passion in my voice. I've bounced back and forth to work carrying a computer back and forth. Half the time it's been the Odroid H2, which is the Intel based board, 110 millimeters by 110. And then the other half the time it's been the Rock Pro 64. With 4 gigs of RAM and the RK3399 processor, $30 cheaper, but it is shocking how performance-wise, I almost can't tell the difference between the two.
Wow. Wow. That's a big wow. So you're talking Intel versus ARM?
Yeah, both have 4 gigs of RAM. I put 4 gigs of RAM on it. Both are running off of eMMC because I couldn't afford a SATA drive and I could not afford a NVMe drive yet for the H2. But here's the gimmick. The Odroid does not have, looking at it, USB-C. And that,
really?
And that Rock Pro 64 has a USB-C drive. Yeah, I have two USB 3 ports, dual NIC, two USB 2 ports, HDMI, DVI, SPDIF, line in and mic, SATA, RAM, and NVMe. There's no USB-C on the Odroid H2. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to insult the Odroid H2. It is frigging fantastic. But that Rock Pro 64, I honestly think if I'm going to predict what is the future of ARM computing devices and how they're going to feel, it is the Rock Pro 64, no holds barred. It is what everything is going to aspire to be like.
Just want to give some mad love to Pine. I think I mentioned it. I ordered this. So this is the aluminum case. I actually haven't put it back together yet. So for the Pine 64, this fits. And the cover is a heatsink onto it. I don't know if I'm giving a good view of it. But yeah, actually, that's one of the cool things I got. Definitely, Pine and Odroid are totally kicking butt, loving what they're doing. If you've been listening to the show for a while, I've often talked about the Banana Pro or Banana Pi Pro, however it is, that it was just a rock solid performer. There, it reminds me of stories they talked about Novell NetWare servers that nobody knew where they were. Like, they built a wall and it was like in a room that nobody, there wasn't even a door to anymore, and it just ran and it had, you know, 7,000 day uptime, stuff like that. And the Pine Rock Pro 64 is kind of getting in that area to me, at least. You know, it seemed a little rocky at first, but definitely it's a solid performer. I don't even think about it anymore. It's just there. It's the concept, and no millennial will understand it. It's the dial tone. The idea that you pick up a phone in back when we picked up phones, yeah, and you had a dial tone.
Yeah, it is a level of stability that really most people aren't accustomed to. It's like opening your door and looking outside. You take it for granted. That's just how it is. And on most modern computing platforms, you expect there to be hiccups once in a while. You expect, well, this is not going to work right every now and then. You expect every couple of years I'm going to have to reformat and flash stuff. That's just how we accept computers to be.
Right.
But the Banana Pi Pro was by far the most stable ARM platform I used, period.
Mm-hmm. But absolutely.
But here's the thing. The ROC 64 is the one that I'm running now on my Nextcloud, and I am having a very sneaky suspicion that I could not touch that thing for 3 years and it would still run just fine.
All right, so can I read about the N2?
Yeah.
So, Odroid N2 AM Logic S922X SBC coming in April for $63 and up. I don't know if it's going to be a $20 bounce in price. I'm assuming that's the 2 gig version. The 4 gig version probably be about $20 more. And it says, due to RAM supply issues, hard kernel canceled the RK3399. And that's what the Pine Rock Pro 64 is. There's an Orange Pi, whatever, out there. There's a lot of machines coming out in the last six-ish months that have had the RK3399.
Yes, but really quick, I will encourage people, again, don't listen to me. Go to YouTube, look up RK3399, look for videos. Everybody's running Android on them for a reason. Nobody has gotten Linux to run at all, basically, on these things, except Armbian got the RK33 on the ROC Pro 64 running like freaking butter.
Who's the British guy with the ball haircut from his mom?
Explaining computers. Cut your fingernails. Cut your stinking fingernails.
So I watched a video of his recently. I didn't watch the whole video. I kind of skipped around in it. But he was comparing machines, and I think he said, I forget which one it was, but it ran best running Android, and it was on the RK3399.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I pick on him for a reason, because I really do like him and I really do like the videos that he does. He does fantastic videos. The last one I saw, he looked at a bunch of different boards and just how they perform. And on some of them, he was very upset about how Linux was not able to be ran on them, but Android was seemingly running fine. Well, there's a reason for that. Android is not an open platform. It is very friendly to closed source binary blobs running in GPUs, long story short. And that's why things tend to run better, in air quotes, visually, graphically, movie-wise, on Android. But on the last set of benchmarks he did, the number one was a $300 board. I want to say it was the one Brian brought up. Yeah, it was like the AMD single board computer. But the number two in performance benchmark was the ROC Pro 64. The ROC 64, sorry, just the ROC 64, which is just a $40 board, which for $40, you're ranking number two when you're comparing like six different boards. That is what people need to notice. And that is when a company is doing the right things. Now, I am literally almost terrified to see the result of this Odroid N2, because there's little doubt in my mind when this thing comes out and I see other people running it and how smooth it's running, I think I'm going to have to buy one.
One? Or well, I want to start off with a tease. There are no USB ports on it. There's four USB 3.0 ports on it.
Oh, yeah, four of them. Four of them puppies.
I'm like, yeah, I was so ready. What was it dropped in price? The Odroid XU4 dropped in price. I said this last show. I said, hey, the Odroid XU4 is going down. Was it $51 or $53? Like, they're clearing out inventory because they're coming out with a new product.
Right. Now, here's the only thing that I've learned to be skeptical of is what I'm going to say. I was looking at buying a PCIe board for my Rock Pro 64, slap it in there and have four USB ports. But if you only have one USB bus and you have four USB 3.0 ports, you will never even get half speed through all the ports. So they mention the fact they have four USB 3 ports, but they do not mention the number of buses. So if, they only have one bus, even though they have four USB 3.0 ports, it's almost pointless to have that many ports. So I really hope they have at least two buses. Really, if they have four buses, it'll be much better. But every board I saw that I could put in my Rock Pro 64 PCIe slot that had four ports was an $80 board.
Ouch. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm reading the spec here. So it says HDMI 2A. I'm not sure what 2A means. And gigabit Ethernet. So I don't want to gloss that over. That's a big deal to me. It says video output up to 4K 60p. Now, usually it's 4K 60 frames per second. Is that what the P is supposed to mean?
I have to assume so, but I'm almost afraid to.
Okay, so the SoC, system on a chip, AM Logic S922X, it's a hexacore with a big little. So what that means is they have two smaller, slower cores and four ARM Cortex-73s that go up to 1.8 gigahertz. And so the smaller cores, the two smaller cores are Cortex-A53s running at 1.9 gigahertz and an ARM Mali G52 GPU at 846 megahertz. And yeah, I'll give you 2 gigs or 4 gigs at 1320 megahertz, 8 megs of SPI flash, eMMC, micro SD, video, audio in and out. Let's see, HDMI. All right, so here it says 4K at 75 hertz, AV port, composite, stereo, audio. All right, so we got the USB, the four USB 3s, one micro USB 2.0 OTG. They can't be powering this with a USB OTG.
No.
I don't know why you'd have a micro, whatever. That always mystified me. Okay, expansion, so you got the 40-pin GPIO, let's see, two I2C, UART, six PWM, SPI, SPDIF, two ADC, and GPIOs, and then it says MIS2X system LEDs. All right, so we got LEDs, we got eMMC boot select switch, there's an IR receiver, two-pin header for a real-time clock. That's a big deal in the ARM world, because you don't get much of that. Although I believe the revision of the ROC 64 is going to have a real-time clock and power, if I remember.
I believe they're going to have a port for you to connect the battery for that.
Yep. So, all right, DC barrel jack, debugging UART for serial console, power consumption, idle, they said 1.6 to 1.8 watts, heavy load, 5.2 to 5.3 watts. That's actually reasonably low for something like this.
Yeah, and that's one of the big pluses with ARM is power consumption and heat. You can do the same things on ARM which with much less power and much less heat, but they still haven't gotten up to the place where Intel is at right now. And if you scroll down, Rich, you'll see the $63 for the 2 gig version, $79 for the 4 gig version. So it's less than $20 for two more gigs of RAM. Now,
I'm getting it.
I know, but here's the gimmick. everybody knows when you go to get like a phone and it has two more gigs, it's like $100 frigging.
Yep.
So that is like proof in the pudding once again that the single board computing manufacturers are doing what they need to do to remain competitive, and their goal is not to rip us off. Their goal is to wow us as users.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, operating systems. Ubuntu 18.04 LTS, 4.9 kernel, as well as Android 9 Pi. It's like, wow.
I know.
My stupid Samsung Galaxy S Note 8, I don't think it has Pi yet. I don't think it has Oreo.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It just says Linux kernel 4.9. It doesn't say if it's a mainline kernel or not. I'll say this. I got to say this again. If they're able to run a mainline kernel on this, which means that they took the processor and they integrated it back up as far in the tree as possible of source code. If they did that and you're able to actually run mainline kernels on this thing, that means you can run anything on this thing. And that is going to be a very refreshing change of pace in the ARM world. But
so this next paragraph here is just like we're yelling about Pine the other week. It says the Android N2 SBC will sell for $63 with 2 gigs of RAM and 79 for 4 gigs of RAM. In case, I can already see some of you, me, throwing banknotes at the screen saying, just take my money. And yes, that's me.
Yeah, so the end of March, so we got about a month and a half before this is going to be at least purchasable. Now the question is are they going to come into supply issues to where it's put up for sale and then it's out of stock and then it's out of stock for like 6 weeks? To me, that's the true test of how successful this is going to be for Odroid themselves. And they have some benchmark scores, but of course, because they're being friendly to Odroid, they're comparing it to a Raspberry Pi 3, an Odroid C1, which is now, I want to say, 5 years old, a Odroid C2, which I believe is at least 3 years old, a Odroid XU4, which is over, I want to say, 2 years old, and then an Odroid N1, which was the mystical, magical device that never came out, and then the Odroid N2, and in all of their benchmarks, it's either clearly winning or it's at least edging out every other thing. And of course, the Raspberry Pi is basically a blip on the radar. It doesn't even show up in some of these.
I'm at Ameridroid right now. I'm wondering if there's pre-sales or anything going on.
Well, and that gives us a good opportunity to say support those who support you. The only way to really indicate to the common person of how good of a company that a company actually is via their customer service. We do not take breaks every 15 minutes to shove sponsorships down your throat because we like getting money. But we're going to take the opportunity to say Ameridroid is the official hardware reseller of Odroid in the United States of America. So if you want to buy from a U.S. company, if you want to support U.S. companies, when you buy these devices, go to Ameridroid.com. But the real reason to go to them is because their customer service is, without a shadow of a doubt, top frigging tier customer service. They have not given me anything ever. I've paid for everything.
They haven't even sent us a card or a nice note.
They haven't sent me candy. Some people send candy in their boxes when you buy stuff. They haven't sent me nothing except for a thing saying thank you, to which I say to myself, no, thank you.
Yeah, nothing on the Ameridroid site yet.
Oh, don't worry. They're doing it right now. I'm sure they're getting it all set up. But yeah, I really hope this has at least two USB buses on it. If this does have two USB buses, 4 gigs for less than $85 with a gig NIC. And I love the heat sinks, to be honest, that Odroid's been doing. They've been huge. They've been whopping, but they've been not ridiculously sized. They just cover what they need to cover. I really do like what I'm seeing out of Odroid and Pine. The only question is, who's going to get my money first?
Okay, if I'm reading the block diagram, it looks like all of the USB 3s are on a single bus.
Well, that's a little bit depressing. Yep. Well, then you're going to get, at the most, I want to say, so if it's USB regular USB, you'll get 2, 4, 6, 8 total possible speed. You're not going to get 8. I believe the fastest you're going to get is a combined 6 out of
Okay, all. Wait. All right. If you're looking at the block diagram, down just one box down from the Ethernet, so it says 10/100/1000, and under that it says 2x USB 3.0 host type A. So maybe it's 2 USB 3 buses.
Well, with 2, you're still not going to get, if it's 3.2, you're still not going to get full speed, but you will get, I want to say, 60% speed. If it's only 3.0 USB, then with 2 buses, you should be able to get full USB 3.0 speeds, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, you know, again, we have companies basically not trying to compare themselves to other people. They're just putting out good products. And they have people who, without being cocky, people in the know being giddy for these new products to come out. I am really interested to see what kind of projects I see develop from this Odroid N2, because something tells me they're going to be pretty nice. Okay, the next two I wanted to bring up, Rich, really quick. One is just a concept, and I was really mad when I figured out it was just a concept. Line 823. This was basically a concept that the guy was thinking about, nothing more. He's thinking about doing a Kickstarter, but the IO available in this small pocketable notebook was literally like sickening.
Oh yeah, we looked at this.
Yeah, it's basically, I want to say, a 6-inch screen on a laptop, I believe. I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. It's been like a week since I looked at it. But the keyboard and the inputs and the ports and the IO on this was literally like sickening. And basically at the end he said, and I'm thinking about doing a fundraiser type thing to see if I can get this thing to be real. Only because I'm so impressed with this makes me say to myself, I am terrified to see how much this thing would be. Because, I mean, it literally has every type of port you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, any way you'd ever want to connect to something, it's got it there.
And he has a bunch of accessories trying to figure out how any administrator in any arena would have anything they could ever possibly need, from a PCIe Express slot to a USB to SATA connector to a like screen protector to like do things in private. It will have a console port so you can go right into the big iron type routers kind of thing. He really was very thorough in the thought process of how he would make his like dream device. This is, as a nerd, I have no problem saying this is sexy.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's funny, I missed it last time. He even has a 1/4-20 socket on the bottom, so you could mount it on a like ball mount tripod head.
Yeah, he ain't playing around.
It's kind of like the guy that says, if I put a supercharger, a turbocharger, and nitrous oxide on it, how good would it be?
Yeah, this is just really nothing more than a concept, but at the same token, a lot of time and a lot of thought was put into this. So just because of that alone, this was something I thought we had to at least talk about. Very cool, very cool. There was another one I wanted to talk about as I marked that as red. This was just off the wall kind of thing, line 838. And the only reason is, I haven't seen people do this before. This was a RK33 ruggedized 10-inch tablet with built-in business thing, like including barcode scanner. This was the kind of thing I could literally see being at least moderately successful in businesses, as being that device that the customer service rep carries around to help satisfy customers without having to go back to their desk for it. It was a 10-inch IP65, which isn't great as far as Ingress Pro protection numbers. IP69 is the highest I believe you can get. So this is IP65, which I believe IP6 means basically all dust. No dust will ever get into the device. And 5 means it's basically waterproof. You can basically submerge it in like an inch of water, pull it back out instantaneously, and it'll be fine. 10-inch Android 7.1 tablet with up to 4 gigs of RAM, 256 gig of flash storage, 4G LTE, GPS, I/O ports that are sealed. You have to like pop them open. 1D, 2D barcode reader. We'll have the accelerometer because Android always likes to have that. And it just looked like a really solid tablet running an RK33 processor. I really do like the idea of seeing the RK3399 being in more products, because every product that it's in will drive the price for it down.
So it's interesting that they have, or it says optional built-in 1D 2D QR barcode reader. They have front and rear cameras, front 2 megapixel, rear 8 megapixel. But yeah, I don't know. How much does the barcode reader add? I'm assuming that's a laser barcode reader.
Yeah, I'll say in my experience, when you typically look at handheld devices that run Android and have barcode scanners on it, it seems like the barcode scanner alone pushes up the price anywhere from like $40 to $60. When it's a 3D barcode scanner as well, that's when it gets to be like $85 to $100 extra. So I think it's basically a fair type price. I'm not going to say fantastic, but fair. Yeah. The hypervisor tutorial, Rich, that was on 837. This to me, I ain't going to lie, Rich. I tried to read it a couple times. This guy at this website, ashw.io, there's little doubt in my mind whoever wrote this is getting paid a hell of a lot of money doing whatever job that they're doing. The amount of detail in this documentation was nearly sickening, is what I want to say. But also the level of expertise to go in and set up this hypervisor. They literally go through every single little thing that needs to happen, and they explain what they're doing. So I basically couldn't keep up with it. I tried my best, but it was just too much for me to handle.
I don't remember. I read this earlier in the week, I guess Sunday night. I think they have a GitHub link somewhere, because he's showing how to compile the source code, and that's with Eclipse.
Yeah, I just knew that.
It's on GitHub.
Yeah, this guy's really good. Hypervisor on ARM computers will become more real as time goes on, easier as time goes on. Being able to virtualize operating systems on it will become almost commonplace, my logic is. By the end of 2019, we are going to see genuine major infrastructure running ARM processors and doing genuine like enterprise grade virtualization. The only question will be is how easy will it be to set up and maintain? So in the beginning, whoever's doing it, like this guy, is going to get a hell of a lot of money.
So one of the things, I don't know if everybody's familiar with GitHub, but GitHub is great for so many things, even 3D objects. So it says there's a commit 11 days ago, so that's good, but it looks like it's the first. Oh, wait, he has 5 commits there. Okay. So, yeah, hope just... Anytime you're looking at something that you want to do something with, make sure the project is current, because you don't want to get involved with something that was end of life a while ago or will soon be end of life.
Yeah, cannot disagree, cannot argue with that. The only other thing I want to bring up, Rich, and only because it's stupid and only because it's cheap and only because it was something that I think could be really cool for, you know, a family to do, or, you know, like big brother, big sister kind of thing. And that was on Hackaday. It was humans versus zombies via the ESP8266. And the 8266 is the processor, the board, the chip that we've talked about off and on for at least a year. You could get ESP8266 boards for as little as like $6. depending on which one you get and whether, and like all the other features that you need. Well, they take an ESP8266 board, add a couple more components to it. And what it basically turns into is like a wrist strap with lights and lasers on it. And basically you can turn it into like a real world shooter type game where you're basically shooting light out of your wrist. And the goal is like to have a human versus a bunch of zombies and see who can win. To me, this is the kind of thing, it's always better if you can to build something between friends or family so you can go through the actual building process versus going out and spending $100+ on some pre-packaged basically consumer end product. If you can actually teach people how to do this, and nothing about it looks really complex, that you could show them all how to build it and then basically go out and have fun in the actual IRL experience and not just playing Fortnite or whatever is the latest piece of crap battle royale game. I just thought it's cool. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about or bring out, Rich?
No. Just one thing I've been playing with the idea on, part of my home automation, which is running Home Automation Assistant. One thing, so you guys don't go down the rabbit hole I went down, is if you're booting Haspian, that's Raspbian with Home Automation System rolled into it, you need to do it off Ethernet, not Wi-Fi. Otherwise, it won't work off Wi-Fi. Even if you do a headless install of Raspbian with all of the configuration, it needs to be Ethernet first. The other thing I've been thinking about is I've been working on presence detection, and I was thinking, can I sniff the wire? No. The Bluetooth, I was going to say GPS, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, the Bluetooth on the cars, but more importantly, since we're all driving, we all have our Bluetooth on our phone all the time. And sure enough, with a Raspberry Pi and Home Automation Assistant, you can do device tracking based on Bluetooth.
Well, I'll just say this, Rich, if you really want to sniff, you're not going to sniff Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Okay, paranoia 101. If you've noticed, on a large, huge, huge percentage of exit ramps that you take on major highways, right as soon as you're like halfway through the exit ramp, if you look to your left or to your right, you will see a green box. Sometimes they're white, rarely they're brown, but most of the time they're green. It's typically only like 10 inch by 8 inch by 6 inches. And what that green box is basically a little box that's sitting there and it's sniffing all of the wireless tire pressure gauges that are driving by. Every single automobile and motorcycle in existence that has been made since 2004 or 2006 has this in every single tire. The difference is not all cars have it built into the dash for you to actually monitor your tire pressure, but it's in every vehicle. So if you want to sniff something, I say sniff something that cannot be enabled or disabled. And since it's not the lowest hanging fruit, it would be, I would suspect, harder to spoof.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I would have to do that with an SDR dongle, but it can't be done. So the other problem with TPMS is I forget if they report every 1 to 2 minutes. It might be 2 minutes that each one will report. So you're not guaranteed that you're going to get it as you go by.
Well, I ain't going to lie. I'm shocked it's that low. But honestly, that's the thing. I don't even know what, like you said, an SDR. I don't even know what it transmits in. I just know it's out there. And now that you say that, it makes sense. Because I know when I put air back in my tire, I literally have
to pull. It doesn't register immediately.
Right, and I have to wait about a minute or so for it to take. So if I have to wait a minute, that tells me it's at least a 2 minute wait.
Mm-hmm. So theoretically, one of your four tires, if you want to do the statistical average, every 15 seconds your car should be reporting.
Right.
You know, in best case scenario, that's worst case scenario, it's 2 minutes. Best case scenario, 15 seconds.
Gotcha. Very cool. Yeah, I will say I am interested in the idea of that, but I am like, It's really hard for me to do stuff like that in the physical world. It's a question of time, and it's the kind of thing I don't even know the first step to sniffing Bluetooth.
Well, it's stinky easy with Raspberry Pi and Home Assistant. You just put a line entry in the config file, and it does it. So my question, there's two things to sniff. There's sniffing the Bluetooth on the vehicles, and then sniffing the Bluetooth on the phones. So we three people in the house, there's three cars, and there's three phones. What I was thinking about doing is putting a Pi Zero out on the fence line. And then I can see if the car has passed the fence because you don't know whether it's coming or going. And if I, you can, but you can do signal strength with the Bluetooth also. So if I put one by the garage, I could detect if it passed the fence line and got stronger at the garage, then I know it came, and that if it does the opposite, I know it's leaving. But just kind of a thought process. Oh, there. I didn't bookmark this. If you Google it, this is another fun one. If you know your boss's Bluetooth ID, now your Bluetooth ID is a MAC address, just like an Ethernet card or Wi-Fi adapter. You could actually set up a warning system, and it can tell based on signal strength if your boss is approaching and if he has his phone in his pocket. So somebody did it, it was on GitHub.
Gotcha. Okay, Rich. I believe we've been going for more than an hour. There are definitely more links than there's. Oh, we have an email. Sorry. We have an email too. Did you want to read it?
I gotta find it first.
I did put it in the Mumble chat if you want it.
Oh. Crap, I actually dragged over it and clicked on the link. Okay, so does it start with check out this guy?
You got it.
Okay, so check out this guy, and it's www.digital-loggers.com/lpc.html. I use them all the time with my installs. Works great for rebooting cable modem when ping fails. By the way, the email icon on your site is pointing to mail@podnuts.com.
Yeah, between me and you, I have no idea what he means by the mail icon, but the gimmick is it doesn't matter. It all comes to my email address anyway.
So this device, it's called ProSwitch, and it has total of one, two, three, four, five outlets, but it looks like the four outlets that have, they're double gangs, so they have two devices could be plugged in. So you have eight controllable independent devices on this to turn on and off.
This is damn near sexy. But yeah, I mean, this has some kind of computer in it, some kind of server in it, and it has Wi-Fi available on it as well. It's as easy to use, easy to set up, clean web interface, secure Wi-Fi and wired Ethernet, so you could hardwire it if you want. Multiple target auto ping reboot, so you can literally set in the firmware if this thing stops responding to a ping, reboot it. It does have, it also says HTTPS, SNMP, REST API, SSH, SSL, Echo and Alexa and more. Lua scripting language. Lua is pretty, I mean, I Lua is archaic yet silly powerful. This is a really interesting device, $170. So if you break it down, eight different ports, just over $20 each power outlet, which I don't think is a ripoff. I don't think this is cheap, but it does sound like it's good quality.
Well, here's the cool thing, and this is what I was talking about last week or last episode, is I got the power strip, the smart power strip, and what I wanted to do is hook it up.
Thing dropped out.
Oh, so I wanted to hook it up with Observium to see if a device went down and that I could, power cycle it with the smart switch. But this is all of that built in together, plus all sorts of connectivity. That's pretty dang cool.
Yeah, and it does say powerful 32-bit CPU with watchdog adds reliability. The only thing making me hesitant is a gut feeling I have to where if I don't have root, then I don't know who the hell does. This has a lot of features, But I worry about the administration of it and the locking down of it. Is it possible for me to lock this down so this company will not have access to it under any circumstances, but I can have access to it? It supports stuff like SSH and SSL, which is good. It says 32-bit CPU, which says maybe I could just install pfSense or something else on it, or some Debian on it, and just control the things myself. I am completely unaware, but no matter what, it literally gets me giddy about just the idea of this. And if you look on the left, also they have a link to the Atomic Pi, which is something that we did talk about, I believe, last episode. So this company is definitely all about the mini PC and using it in more enterprise infrastructure.
Looks real cool. Definitely a cool device. And if you have more money than time, that's the way to go.
And if you zoom in on it, you can see webpowerswitch.com is printed on it. So maybe you could, email them, Rich, and ask for another NDA. Can't hurt. Yeah, and that email was from Joey. Thank you very much for the email, Joey.
Very cool.
Yeah, so if
Yeah,
you,
that does everything I want it to do.
well, that's the thing. What doesn't this do? It is my question. I don't know. But if you would like to send in an email, you can send it to minipc@podnuts.com. Links will be in the notes to send us an email. You could also send us a voicemail at 7076 Podnut. Rich, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
FlyingRich.com is where all of my social media is aggregated, and there's a contact me or contact us link there.
Very cool, very cool. And I want to say again, thank you to John for your patronage, for being a Patreon. There has to be a better verb for that or adverb
Yeah.
for that.
So to make it worse, there's another site called gunstreamer.com that I'm on, and they have their version of Patreon. They call it Contributus. So I joke that I got Contributus and doctor gave me a shot and cleared up real quick.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting really bad names on some of these services, and I don't know what it's going to take to fix it.
And I'm kind of bummed. John Hollinger, who I talk to quite frequently, I was up in Jackson, Michigan, and we were gonna meet up somewhere, and it didn't work out. So I'm kind of bummed because that's really cool when I was traveling around being able to meet people.
Gotcha. I want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for sharing the link with friends and family. And do not forget, anytime you want to contact us, go ahead and we will definitely contact you back. And we will talk to everyone again in about a week.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.